You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I don't have to tell you guys who Harvey Milk is, but just in case... Gay man elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, San Francisco City Council, in 1977, led the successful fight against an anti-gay ballot initiative backed by Anita Bryant, who was then America's most prominent and really effective anti-gay bigot slash activist. And then Harvey was murdered, assassinated in 1978. Anyway, I wanted to open this week's show with a clip from Milk's most famous speech, his hope speech. It's a long clip for the top of the show. It's about 2 minutes long. But I think it's worth it, and I hope you'll indulge me.
Somewhere in Des Moines or San Antonio, there's a young gay person who all of a sudden realizes that she or he is gay, knows that if the parents find out, they'll be tossed out of the house, the classmates would taunt the child, and the Anita Bryans and John Briggs are doing their bit on TV, and that child had several options, staying in a closet, suicide, and then one day that child might open a paper and it says homosexual elected in San Francisco, and there are two new options. The option is to go to California. Stay in San Antonio and fight. 2 days after I was elected, I got a phone call, and the voice was quite young. It was from Altoona, Pennsylvania, and the person said, thanks. And you've got to elect gay people so that that young child and the thousands upon thousands like that child know that there's hope for a better world. There's hope for a better tomorrow. Without hope, not only gays, but those blacks and the Asians, and the disabled, the seniors, the usses. The us's, without hope, the us's give up. I know that you cannot live on hope alone, but without it, life is not worth living. And you, you've got to give them hope. Thank you very much.
I was that child, that kid Harvey Milk was talking about, the one who opens the paper and reads homosexual elected in San Francisco. In the fall of 1977, that November, when Milk won that election, I think it was his third race, I was 13 years old, and I read about his election in the papers, and I saw Milk on the news, and he gave me hope. Thanks to him, and thanks to the movement that Milk was a part of, I knew I had options besides the closet or suicide. Which brings me to a study released last week, a really solid study published in the reputable journal JAMA Pediatrics that documented a drop in suicide attempts by LGBT young people in states that legalized same-sex marriage compared to states that hadn't yet. A 7% drop, which sounds kind of small until you consider how many LGBT youth attempt suicide every year and until you translate that 7% drop into real numbers. Because that 7% drop means 134,000 fewer suicide attempts every year by queer youth. Andrew Sullivan, writing in New York Magazine, beautifully captured why and how marriage equality could impact queer youth in this way. People, of course, who are too young to marry themselves and impact them so profoundly. In the old days, Sullivan writes, as soon as you realized you might be gay, you understood immediately that you'd never be worthy of the marriage your parents or siblings had. That knowledge often pierced the young psyche with shame and stigma. Almost by definition, many of these most troubled kids don't and won't acknowledge their feelings and so are resistant to counseling. But with legalizing marriage equality, there is another way to reach them, by the law itself telling this invisible and silent group that their state sees them as equal to their peers. It's an anti-suicide measure all by itself, requiring no counselors, carried in the general atmosphere, removing or decreasing stigma. So, marriage equality, that gave them hope. Not the hope to marry someone when they grow up, necessarily. For many of them, yes, it gave them hope of that, even for most of them, perhaps. But not every queer kid wants to get married when they grow up, just like not every straight kid wants to get married when they grow up. But the law tells all lesbian, gay, and bi kids that they are worthy as their straight peers, of marriage. Some gay and bi kids are lucky enough to get that message from their parents, from their peers maybe, from their preachers, liberal ones and teachers, progressive ones, but not all and nowhere near most. And think of all the images that were generated when marriage equality came to a new state, all those couples in the news being embraced by their friends and family members. Those images and those stories reached people who needed reaching, people who were hard to reach, those queer kids, and it helped. It gave them hope. The law and the media and communities all telling them that they are equal to their peers. Those images said and continue to say with the now routine coverage of same-sex marriage, those images said and continue to say, you may feel alone, but you are not on your own. Right now, your parents may be against you, and that can change, but your government, your state, is on your side. Which brings me, distressingly, to a decision taken by the Trump administration last week. Trump scrapped a directive issued by the Obama administration that said federal anti-discrimination law required public schools to let trans kids use the appropriate restrooms, the restrooms that align with their gender identity. Now, some are out there saying that there isn't much to this. Nothing really changed last week because a federal judge in Texas put Obama's guidelines on hold last year before they could even take effect. But this move, it does real and immediate harm. Because what you've got here is the most powerful man in the world, Donald fucking Trump, telling the most vulnerable children in the world, trans and other non-gender conforming children, that they don't matter, that they aren't equal to their peers, that the law and the state isn't on their side. If being told you matter, if being told you're equal to your peers under the law can drive the suicide rate down, being told the exact opposite, being told that you're less than, not equal, not valued, that can drive the suicide rate up. So what Trump did last week, that's going to kill trans and other gender nonconforming kids. And that is not an exaggeration. You got to give them hope, like Harvey said. Right now, the government under Trump is stripping hope away from trans kids. And you know what? We're not going to let that happen without a fight. We are going to fight to protect trans kids and dreamers and other immigrants and refugees and children, U.S. citizens whose undocumented parents may be deported. We may not be able to stop the Trump administration, but we can fight it. And seeing people get in the fight against Trump now, like watching Harvey Milk fight and ultimately defeat Anita Bryant then, that'll give them hope. It'll help them see that they have options and allies, and that, all by itself, the fight, will save lives. Give them hope. Get in the fight. Resist. All right, before we get to the show, I just want to say, if you haven't seen the excellent documentary about Harvey Milk, The Times of Harvey Milk, you should definitely find it and watch it. And if you haven't seen Moonlight, which won the Academy Award for Best Picture on Sunday night in a flawless and smooth award ceremony, you should watch that too. And on today's show, lots of Q, lots of A, some D, and Randy Kreger, an expert on borderline personality disorder, joins us for the Magnum Savage Lovecast to discuss dating issues around bipolar disorder. You can subscribe to the Magnum Savage Lovecast twice as long, more questions and guests and no ads at savagelovecast.com. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by WeVibe, makers of award-winning pleasure products for couples. Want to infuse more passion and connect with your partner in exciting new ways? WeVibe designs products that work with your body to enhance pleasure. Go to WeVibe.com. That's we-vibe.com. Promo code Savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering Savage. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers all fresh, high quality ingredients and recipes you need to create delicious home cooked meals. Get your first three meals for free by going to blueapron.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. So my 61-year-old dad has recently opened up to the field or the world of kink. And he's kind of sort of in a no details way telling me about it. And it happened because he started a relationship with a younger woman, which has since ended. But I guess now he has discovered quite a bit about himself and I'm super excited for him, but I think he's feeling a little down in the dumps after ending this little fling that he was involved with. Also, before he was involved with her, he had been single for like 8 years and was not involved with anyone in any type of way during those 8 years. So as you can imagine, you know, he's feeling a little weird, but I really am super happy for him that he's discovering something about himself at the age of 61. And I want to be a good daughter, and I would really love to point him in a direction. I told him about that life, but other than that, I guess I live a pretty vanilla lifestyle myself. So I was just wondering if I could get some advice on how to tell my dad how to explore his kinks. I would really love to kind of give him some confidence and see him make new friends and, you know, have fun and stuff. So if you have any suggestions, please let me know.
Yeah, I have just one suggestion. Boundaries. Boundaries are my suggestion. You want to be a good daughter, and it sounds like you're a really good daughter. And in my opinion, a good daughter is happy for her dad. Happy he's making new friends. Happy he's out there having sex. Even happy he's having his heart broken once in a while. But a good daughter is not out there micromanaging her dad's sex life. You pointed him at FetLife. It's now on him to make an effort to get out there, to make some friends. You could say to him, look, you got out there, you made an effort, you made a connection. It wasn't for the rest of your life, but that's evidence that you could make another connection with another woman. There are kink events. There are conventions. You know, I was working on a letter on spanking for the column next week, and I wrote to Jillian Keenan, the terrific author and writer who's a lot more than just fetish and kink and spanking, but she's written about that too. She's got a great book out called Sex with Shakespeare, and everyone should read it. She's been a guest on the podcast. And I wrote to her about how this person could tap into the non-sex, no PIV, no PI anything, spank fetish community scene. And she sent me back a list. In a minute, she sent me back a list of 7 annual spanking conventions all across the country. So what's the lesson there for your dad? What's the moral there for your dad in my interaction with Jillian? There are lots of kink events going on all over the country all the time. Munches, meetups, conventions, and other kinksters are in a much better position to direct him to those events, to the community he wants to be a part of and how to tap into it, than you, his vanilla daughter, ever could be or should even want to be. Your dad is an adult. He is 61 years old, presumably not infirm and not clueless. My suggestion is that he get out there with your tacit, slightly at a distance, don't need to know everything support, and do this on his own.
Hey, Dan. This is a 27-year-old lesbian calling from the Boston area. And I have a question for you. I'm in a little bit of a pickle, and my girlfriend and I listen to your podcast every week. We just love you, love you. And I'm finally presented with a question that I really need some help with. So, long story short, my dad and my mom divorced when I was a baby, and my dad has not been in the picture. My mother recently passed away, and my father, who I do not speak to, but I am very close with his parents, has not even reached out to offer his condolences to me or anything. He really hasn't reached out to do anything in my entire life, but he is coming to visit, and he's going to be staying at my grandparents' house, who live like 5 minutes away. And I am feeling a little upset. I'm feeling like there's some displaced anger towards my grandparents for even being okay with him coming to stay and not even mentioning to see me. And I just don't know. Should I just continue going on being quiet? Because I know you always say, you know, when it comes to your parents or your family and situations like this, your presence is all that you have to offer them. Should I continue on with just keeping the silence because I am so angry and so hurt by the person or lack thereof that he has been my entire life? Or should I go over there and confront him? I'm really nervous about it. Typically, I would just ignore the entire situation, but I really kind of need your help.
So I have a question for you before I answer your questions. Do you want to have a relationship with your dad going forward, or do you want to sit with your anger for the rest of your life? And honestly, I'm not baiting you. I think you are justified. I think you have a lot to be angry about, and you could sit with that anger the rest of your life and not have a relationship with your father. I do think, though, you need to have some compassion and empathy for your grandparents in the impossible situation that they've found themselves in, being torn between their desire to have a relationship with their granddaughter and their love for you and their love for their son, even if they recognized his faults and what a deeply shitty father or not a father he was to you all these years. So I think you need to do your homework before you decide whether or not to confront your dad. I think you need to go talk to your grandparents. Sounds like you're mad at them too. You need to talk to them. And I wonder if there's not kind of a family-wide trait at work here, an emotional strategy, because you say, do I continue on just keeping the silence? Typically, I would ignore the entire situation. Is that what your grandparents have done? What you also are going to do in this emotionally fraught situation? Instead of opening up to you about how they feel about their son, instead of directly addressing the shitty, impossible, fraught elephants stomping all over the room, they sidestepped it. So they've never really had a conversation with you about how they feel about their son and the way he's treated you. And so now, finding out after your mother's death, and my heart goes out to you, but finding out after your mother's death that they're welcoming this man into their home, you feel personally betrayed. And I think you feel that betrayal deeply because you don't understand where your grandparents are coming from. You don't empathize with their position, not because you lack empathy generally, but perhaps because you've never discussed it with your grandparents. You don't know what they're thinking. You feel that this is a betrayal, them welcoming him into their home, a short 5-minute drive from your house, without discussing it with you, without helping you brace yourself or prep for it, without making contacting you a condition that they imposed on him for them welcoming him into their home. You need to have a talk with your grandparents about what they think about the last 27 years and what they think about their son, and listen to them. Listen to what they have to say about, again, I think, the impossible position that they found themselves in, wanting to have a relationship with their granddaughter, also wanting to have a relationship with their obviously deeply shitty kid. As for whether you go and confront your father, yeah, go and confront your father. What the fuck do you have to lose? You don't have a relationship with your father. He hasn't been a father to you. You have questions you would like to ask him. He owes you some explanation. And if you go in there and you confront him and you get nothing out of him, then you did what you could do. And you have the answer that you need to continue on as you've continued without a father in your life. And if it blows up and if it's ugly, then it just will cauterize the wound. It'll affirm the choice that, not that you've made, the choice that was imposed on you to be a fatherless child with a father rattling around out there in the world. But who knows? You never know in a confrontation like that what might shake loose. Maybe you'll have a screaming fight and make some sort of connection that allows you to not rebuild the relationship. There never was a relationship, but to have some sort of contact going forward, if that's what you want. And, you know, not to go all cycle babble on you, perhaps that is what you want. Perhaps you wouldn't feel this strongly about his visit, and you wouldn't feel this anger so deeply if you didn't ache on some level for a connection to him, or if not a connection to him, an answer from him that will explain, not excuse, his absence in your life. This episode of the Savage Love Cast is brought to you by WeVibe. WeVibe, creators of the Couples Vibrator and the new WeVibe Sync. Sync discreetly fits between you for hands-free, shared pleasure during sex, so you can enjoy your sex life only more. Sync is adjustable to fit your body, so you'll feel the vibrations right where you want them. And Sync is rechargeable, completely waterproof, and made with body-safe materials. Sync to your smartphone to play together even when you are apart. The free WeConnect app adds to the fun with features like beat mode that vibes to the rhythm of your favorite music, or touch mode for real-time control at your fingertips. Get free discreet shipping and for limited time, 20% off Sync or their entry-level WeVibe Unite. Go to WeVibe.com and use the promo code SAVAGE. That's We-Vibe.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. Late 20s. straight cis man living on the East Coast. I was calling to see if you could shed any light or give your opinion on when having a type turns into fetishization or just outright racism. There's been a lot of really good conversation about how this weird, kind of creepy obsession that a lot of straight guys have with Asian women is really racist because it's tied to these orientalizing stereotypes of Asian women and how that's really fucked up. And I had a conversation with a friend recently because we were talking about people we're into, and it came up that she's really attracted generally to South Asian men. She's had at least one boyfriend who's of, I believe, Japanese descent. And I also mentioned that I happen to find Desi women, South Asian women, from India and Pakistan, also really attractive. I can't give any specific reason why. I just for several years have just thought, women from that area, a lot of women from that area can be very attractive to me, and I'm not sure why. And I'm trying to be introspective and get into these emotions. So I was wondering if you had any opinions or if any callers could add opinions to that. Is having a type that's based on, race and ethnicity, is that inherently racist? Is that something that, requires more introspection? I would really love your thoughts on it.
Before I answer your question, let's talk about a really kind of icky article in Time magazine from a few years ago, 9 Ugly Lessons About Sex from Big Data. So they data mined dating websites like OkCupid and others, and they came up with some really depressing facts. Straight men think women have an expiration date. Straight women are less likely to express sexual desire than other demographics. Searches for "Is my husband gay?" occur in states where gay marriage is least accepted. And number 5 on their list was this disturbo: Asian men are the least desirable racial group to women. And I'm just going to read the whole paragraph. On OkCupid, users can rate each other on a 1-5 scale. While Asian women are more likely to give Asian men higher ratings, women of other races, black, Latina, white, give Asian men a rating between 1 and 2 stars less than what they usually rate men. That's depressing. I think that's sad for Asian men. I think it's unfair to Asian men, who are just as likely to be hot and attractive, conventionally or unconventionally, as other men are. But there are cultural stereotypes about Asian men that pounded into people's heads, that they are less virile, less masculine, and consequently, for many women and many gay men, less desirable. So when I hear a question like yours, where there is a woman out there in the world who is attracted to Asian men, particularly, the last thing I want to tell her on behalf of Asian men is to not act on that or to feel terrible about that. Asian men are already at this disadvantage in the dating pool because of racism. So you find someone who's attracted to Asian people and you scold them for being racist, and you make that racist, unfair dating pool even worse by removing people from it through guilt who are primarily attracted to Asian people. I think that's not helpful. Of course, someone can be attracted to certain racial or ethnic groups for racist reasons. But I think the larger problem is people not being attracted to people from certain racial or ethnic groups for racist reasons. It is fine to have a preference. People need to interrogate those preferences, as they might say on a college campus. They need to wonder whether those preferences are actually theirs, if they are attracted to the types they believe themselves to be attracted to because those are the types they're attracted to and the only types they're attracted to, or because those are the types that were assigned to them by the culture, by racist beauty standards, by shitty families that we might have grown up in, that communicated to us, maybe not verbally, but socially and in other ways, what was not acceptable as a partner. So I find myself in this weird position when I get questions like this, because I am so cognizant of this fact, because I hear from people who have a hard time out there in the dating pool because they are from a racial minority group. Yeah, you need to think about who you're attracted to and why. You need to, if you're attracted to a certain racial group or ethnic type, you need to ask yourself, am I seeing this person as a stereotype? Am I attracted to a cultural trope? Am I attracted to some Gilbert and Sullivan operetta version of what an Asian woman is? Or am I attracted to Asian women and able to recognize that Asian women are as complicated and multidimensional and as individual as any other type of woman is? And if the answer is the latter, don't spend a lot of time beating yourself up about it. Get out there and act on it. Same goes if you're attracted to Asian men primarily. Interrogate it, think about it, make sure that you aren't only attracted to some Western orientalist, in your word, stereotype that you carry around in your head about who or what Asian men are. But then if you can get to a pass, go for it. I find it highly revealing that these aren't the sorts of questions that people who are attracted only to people within their own racial or ethnic group are ever confronted with. I wonder sometimes if there isn't some racial stay-in-your-laning about how people are treated about this, that it's the people who are moving out of their lane who are made to feel, or attracted to people who aren't in their racial lane or ethnic group, are made to feel guilty, are hounded, or you know, if they're good liberal progressives, are hounding themselves about this, are interrogating themselves about this, and never letting themselves off the fucking hook. But in answer to your question, I guess, yeah, racists can have types, but not all people with types are racists. There's one important thing you can do to help ensure having a good day, and that's getting a good night's sleep the night before. One company has set out to make this possible. It's Bowl and Branch. They've reinvented sheets and bedding with the sole purpose of making your nights more comfortable than ever. This is a company I want you to discover. Their bedding is so soft, it will be a new standard of comfort you'll measure everything else by. You can only get these products at one place, bowlandbranch.com, where you know you're paying for quality sheets and not department store overhead. You're getting amazingly luxurious sheets for a couple of $100. Go online to Bowl, that's B-O-L-L, and branch.com. And they'll let you try them risk-free for 30 nights. And it gets even better. Go to bowlandbranch.com today for $50 off your first set of sheets plus free shipping. And all their products come beautifully packaged in their signature boxes. Go to bowlandbranch.com today for $50 off your first set of sheets and use the promo code SAVAGE. Bowlandbranch.com, promo code SAVAGE. That's bowlandbranch.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I had a really unusual experience last night. I went on a Tinder date with a guy I had been talking with really casually for like not that long, maybe just a couple weeks, and thought that we were connecting really well, better than pretty much everyone I've tried to talk to on Tinder, and I was feeling hopeful for the date, but my expectations were pretty low still, being kind of the reality of many Tinder romances. And the date didn't really go very well. We were walking over to this bar where some of my friends were DJing, and I realized that I wanted to end the date because I didn't want to feel responsible for him at the bar because I love to dance and I didn't really want to babysit someone or let them get in the way of my dancing. So I was sort of stalling and I was smoking a spliff outside the bar talking to him. And the whole time I'm like trying to figure out how I'm going to do this. Then out of nowhere, things just got really weird and I'm not quite sure how the conversation led to this because I'm still sort of baffled by it, but he just tells me that he was sexually abused by his parents and grandparents, and I was really caught guard. Then I told him I wanted to end the date, and we parted ways, and I'm left feeling a lot of guilt about the way this played out, and also a lot of frustration. One of the most awkward dates of all time, but also one of my most triumphant moments, knowing that I wanted to make a decision for myself and for my own good. Just wondering what you thought, maybe what I could have done different to maybe support him more, but also like, I don't really know him and I'm not looking to inherit his problems.
Okay, let's for a moment set aside the elephant on that Tinder date outside while you were smoking that spliff, the bomb he dropped, your date dropped, and talk about, and I'm not blaming the victim here, but talk about the mistakes that you made on that Tinder date. Two big ones. The first one, and we've covered this, don't invest weeks of time in text and or email exchanges after you've established a mutual interest with someone that you've met on a dating app. Meet quickly, because you never know how you're going to feel once you are face to face with this person, what your chemical reaction to them is going to be, whether they're going to present themselves as well in person as they do via brief texts. So you want to meet up quickly. The second mistake, you do not want to have an open-ended first date with someone that you're meeting through a dating app. I've talked about this a lot, but apparently people don't listen to me. So maybe people will listen to Philip Galanes, who writes the Social Cues advice column in the Sunday Style section of the New York Times. And a week or two ago, he had some advice for a woman who was having problems with people she was meeting on Tinder. She was going on these dates with a lot of buildup. First mistake, not a lot of buildup. Establish mutual interest, meet quickly, don't build it up for weeks, don't fantasize. And then she was going on these open-ended dates like you did, where she felt trapped. And Philip says, and it's good advice, schedule these meetings before yoga or dinner with friends, Philip writes. Think of them as little hors d'oeuvres in your day, not the main event. Caller, what you needed was an out. I'm meeting up with my friends later to do X, and you are not invited to this thing later that I'm doing with my friends. I have a hard out. I have plans after this. Let's meet up quickly for coffee. Meet up quickly for a cocktail, and then I have to be at X, and you are not invited to X. So those are the best practices. Don't make a huge investment before meeting, and be sure that first meeting is limited duration. Be sure you have a hard out from that first meeting, as they say in LA, a hard out. Now, about the bomb he dropped, you have nothing to feel guilty about. He put you on the spot, and by sharing that with you, he was demanding something from you that really you didn't owe him. The kind of emotional support that he might be owed by family, of course, not the family that molested him, the kind of emotional support he might be owed by true friends, by people he knows well, by the therapist that hopefully he's seeing, they owe him the response that you feel guilty for not giving him in that moment. All you owed him was an expression of empathy. That's terrible. That's too bad. I'm so sorry. That sounds like something that you need to talk about with a therapist. That sounds like something you need to lean on people who know you very well. We don't know each other very well. We just met. I cannot provide you as your Tinder date this evening with the kind of emotional support and comfort that it sounds like you need. And then you make your exit. So you made your exit. I hope you took a moment to express some empathy. If you didn't and you're feeling guilty, you can. You're not obligated to. You can send him an email, send him a text via the app saying, it was nice to meet you. I'm so sorry that that happened to you. I hope you're getting the help that you need, and I wish you well. And if he doesn't understand that that means you do not wish to see him again, and he keeps coming at you, then you have to say, look, dude, I'm not interested in pursuing this any further. Please stop communicating with me. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. They are careful about the ingredients they source so you can feel good about using them and eating them. Terry and I are big fans of the service, and we're eating better because of it. It's also incredibly delicious and stretches the boundaries of what we would normally cook. Check out what's available this week. Salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple, vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips, spicy shrimp coconut with cabbage and rice. Do you eat this well normally? No, of course you don't. Get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, Dan. We're a semi-open swing couple living on the west coast of Canada. My partner and I have a very strict rule about using condoms with others. We met another couple a few months ago and really like them. Let's call them Scott and Cheryl. We've played with them 3 or 4 times now, and we spend non-sexual time with them as well. While they are both very sexually open and active, they are still new to the lifestyle. When the four of us play together, everyone seems to really enjoy themselves. The guys are bisexual, so there's lots of oral play all around. While Scott seems to be having a great time, he never gets hard. Scott gets plenty of oral attention from the three of us, but he doesn't seem to get hard long enough to actually fuck me. Everyone else seems to be having a good time, and we really don't question it too much. We don't want Scott to feel pressured or weird about it. Sometimes he apologizes afterwards, saying it takes him a long time to get hard. Last week, out of the blue, Scott messaged me, apologizing for never being inside of me, and said it's a condom thing. I assured him that I have been having a good time and left it at that. we understand that condoms don't work for everyone. We want to make Scott feel comfortable, and we don't want to make a big deal out of this. But I'm worried by not addressing it, are we coming across as uncaring about his pleasure? My question for you, Dan, how much are we responsible for Scott's erection? If he can't fuck me because he doesn't like condoms, should I be feeling bad? Should we have an open, four-way discussion about it, or just let it slide? Love to hear your thoughts.
I'm trying to think of something that might make it harder for a guy to get hard than a four-person meeting call to discuss whether or not he's getting erections in the moment or not, but I really can't come up with anything. That seems like the enemy of any potential future erections Scott may have. That conversation, that meeting, that conference you want to call, that Potsdam conference you want to have about partitioning Scott's erection. So I am definitely in the anti-call a meeting to discuss this problem. I bet that Scott is nervous. My hunch is that Scott's a little self-conscious, that Scott hasn't been able to get hard in the moment, in these four ways with you guys. Bet you anything that he's hard after, bet you anything he's jacking off about this shit later and hard with the wife later. And so he rolled out a fall guy. He rolled out a patsy. He pinned the blame on condoms, his latex fall guy, to take the pressure off him and off his dick. He just said, you know, I'm really sorry that my dick hasn't been there. I don't want you to be self-conscious about it. And some women are, you know, sometimes a dude can't get hard. The woman thinks it's her. So this may have been motivated in part by Scott's concern that maybe you were feeling self-conscious about him not getting hard in these moments. And he just wanted to take the pressure off and say, hey, condoms, they're kryptonite for my dick. And your proper response is not to loosen your boundaries around condom usage. You should stay firm yourself when it comes to condom usage. The proper response is say, no big deal. If and when you can get hard in a condom long enough to fuck me, that would be great. Looking forward to that. If not, oral and rolling around and mutual masturbation and whatever else the four of us want to get down to is great, is fine, is, I don't want to say good enough because it makes it sound like all that shit is a consolation prize. It's great sex, mutual masturbation, oral sex, rolling around in a heap, the four of you. It's great sex, whether or not Scott's dick gets hard enough in the moment to fuck you. So stick with condoms. You might want to get some female condoms and see if that doesn't help. Perhaps you wearing the condom, a female condom, might make it possible for Scott to get hard. But otherwise, don't even bring it up again. Just have your sex dates and no pressure and definitely condoms for penetration. And if he gets hard, great. If he doesn't get hard, no big deal. And he's not to blame. You're not to blame. The condoms are to blame.
Hey, Dan, 26-year-old guy here from the East Coast. My hookup buddy, who is 25 and I have been friends for many years, we grew up in the same small town, 2 hours from where we live now. A few months ago, her and I were hanging out when she received a message on Facebook, and immediately I could tell she was upset. And she told me this. So growing up, she took classes at a martial arts center in our small town. A guy that taught there was well known around the town. This guy was about in his 30s, and now he's in his 40s. She told me that when she was 13 through 14, this guy was her teacher and had made several advances on her, asking her if she wanted to feel what it was like to be fingered, to give him a blowjob, etc. She says nothing ever actually happened and that she would just laugh it off and try to ignore it. And again, this was happening until she was 14 and finally moved on to a different teacher. Now, I knew this guy growing up, and he used to make some weird, creepy comments about my girlfriends at the time, but I just laughed it off. Over the years, he still tries to reach out to her and will even get mad when she ignores him. Of course, my first instinct is to tell this creep off, and I said she should say she remembers him and to never contact her again. She really expressed that she just doesn't want anything to do with him. She doesn't want to contact him. She just wants to forget it ever happened, and she made me promise that I wouldn't do so either. So now this guy still teaches kids in our small town. I have friends who have kids that are taught where this guy works, and I'm left in a position where I don't know what to do. I've considered sending him an anonymous email. I've considered reaching out to the people I know to say, don't send your kid there. Now, I have to acknowledge, and I do trust what this girl says. I've never known her to be a liar at all, but who knows? Maybe the story could be exaggerated, and I run the risk of ruining this guy's life. Or if it's all true, I run the risk of exposing my friend to backlash from this guy if he can put together that she outed him. I don't want to cause this girl any more pain, but if this is true, then there are probably more victims of this. I don't know what to do, man. Any help would be appreciated. Love the podcast. Thank you.
Your friend who shared this with you put you in a morally compromised position where inaction on your part may lead to other young women being sexually harassed or worse. Odds and stats and research shows that if he did this to her, to this friend of yours, to one student, he's done it to others and is probably still doing it to students. And I think you have to go to your friend and say, we can't be silent in the face of this because other young women, girls, are vulnerable and may be being abused. And who knows how long this has been going on or how long he's been getting away with this because people wanted to avoid the confrontation and the ugliness. It can't be avoided. Avoiding the confrontation that's an ugliness in a situation like this allows the real ugliness, a worse ugliness, to metastasize like a cancer and potentially destroy people's lives, including the lives of other girls that you know, the daughters of friends of yours. Yeah, you have to act with or without your friend. And you can go to her and tell her that you're going to do something. You'd like to do it together potentially. But if not, you're not going to alert him. You're not going to give him a warning. You're going to go to the school. You're going to go to the administrators. And you're going to present them with a letter outlining what you've been told, what you know. Also, like you did at the end of your call, outlining what you don't know. But putting the administrators on notice. Look at the Sandusky affair. Look at the Sandusky rape scandal at Penn State, which went on for, what was it, decades, a decade and a half? And people knew that Jerry Sandusky, including Joe Patero, whatever the fuck his name was, they knew that he was raping boys. And to avoid confrontation, to avoid scandal, they said nothing. And this went on for a very, very long time. And top people at Penn knew about it. But they didn't know that other people knew about it and would hold them to account for it potentially. And what you can do by walking into that school, by walking into the administrator's office, you can present them with a letter that says, you are now accountable. I know this happened, or I believe this happened. You are accountable now. You have to investigate and you have to intervene. If you've known that this is going on and you've done nothing, or if you suspected this is going on and done nothing, you must act now. Because not just the lives of these girls, or the safety and health and mental health of these girls are at risk, you are saying to these administrators who may be complicit in their inaction in these abuses that they will face the music too, that there will be consequences for them too. Because not only do they know, if they know, but now they know, you know, they know potentially, and they will have to act. I'm sorry that this may put you on a collision course with your friend. It may even put your friendship at risk. You may lose a friend over this. But, and for the other girls in that school, even if you had no connection to them, you have to act. Hopefully your friend, when you talk to her about it, will see that you indeed have to act. And with or without her, you will act.
Hi, Dan. I'm a bi cis man and have been in a monogamous relationship with a woman at work for 4 months. She has a flirtatious relationship with a married guy at work that predates our relationship. They do yoga and lunch together and meet up for private dinners and weekend hangouts. Every day and every evening, they chat with each other on social media and text, share funny pictures and videos, which are sometimes sexually charged. They do this nonstop. When they planned a yoga date, he joked about reserving the spot right behind her, implying that he wanted an ideal view. He recently sent her an Instagram photo of a glass dildo, and his wife is none the wiser. I've asked many questions and made my discomfort known, but she can't stand my discomfort with this friendship. When I ask her if they have been physical or sexual, she says no, and that she would never cheat on me. But nonetheless, I feel uncomfortable and anxious. I see this guy every day at work, so I have little opportunity to take a breather from the topic, and it's taking me over. I try to get over my own bullshit and chill the fuck out, but nothing is working. I was hoping that my non-aggressive, honest approach to this would have her change some of her behavior with this guy, but instead, she tells me I'm overreacting and acting crazy. I've never asked her to end the relationship. I would never do that, but she is unwilling to make any sacrifices for me. Sex has already become infrequent because the conversation is taking over. I worry that I will become less attractive to her, and she will feel annoyed, not trusted, and abandon our relationship entirely. I'm clearly having trust issues. What can I do?
We listened to your call a couple of times, all of us did. And the sense of the Senate here is that your girlfriend is fucking this other guy. But let's set that aside. Let's not even think about that. Let's pretend that there is no other guy. Let's pretend that there's some other reason that just 4 months into this relationship, the sex is falling apart, that you guys are at each other's throats, maybe about some other issue, not some other guy coming to yoga to look at your girlfriend's ass, but some other issue you guys are at a falling out point about. How much more investment are you going to make in this relationship if the sex is collapsing at 4 months and you guys are fighting at 4 months about something that you just can't get on the same page about? Seems to me that just 4 short months in, you might want to pull the fucking plug and walk, because at 4 months, you should still be kind of in the honeymoon stage. At 4 months, you should still be fucking the shit out of each other and making moony faces at each other in restaurants, much to the annoyance of couples of much longer duration who have to look at how happy you are and remember what that felt like and think that's never going to happen for me again because I married this asshole. Yeah, at 4 months, that's how you should be feeling. If this is how you're feeling at 4 months, even if there was no other guy that she probably is fucking but might not be fucking, you should walk. All right, let's game this out now. Let's say she's fucking this other guy. You say you're bi. You say you're in a monogamous relationship. Is an open relationship something that you would contemplate? Is that something you would be up for if it was above board, if it was an ethical non-monogamous relationship and a consensual non-monogamous relationship? If she was fucking this other guy at work and dating you or dating you both, is that something that you could see yourself doing? If so, maybe you toss that on the table. Maybe by tossing that on the table, you will get the truth from her about whether or not she's fucking this guy, and she probably is. And maybe then if you guys had a consensual non-monogamous relationship, you could fuck other guys at work or elsewhere too. Maybe not everybody at work fucking each other. Maybe that's a bad idea. Maybe you could fuck guys who aren't at work, but you could fuck other guys too, or other girls too, if you had a consensual, above board, ethical, honest, non-monogamous relationship. At the very least, now let's game out, she's not fucking this guy. At the very least, the way she interacts with this guy would cause a reasonable person like you or like this guy's wife to believe that she is fucking this guy because they have no boundaries, because they chat and flirt like two people who are fucking or desperately want to fuck and will soon fuck. And that is, if she were single, not an issue. It's an issue for his wife, but not an issue necessarily for her. And we don't know what's going on in their marriage. Maybe they have a companionate marriage. Maybe his wife is asexual and he's allowed to do what he wants outside of the marriage. Who knows? But she would be in the free and clear if she were single. But she is not single. She has a boyfriend, that would be you, whose sense of emotional and sexual safety and security and primacy she has to answer for. She has obligations to you. She has to accommodate and work with your feelings and your insecurities. And let's say that these are just insecurities. Let's say she's not fucking this guy, and she is, but let's say she's not fucking this guy. It's inconsiderate the way she interacts with this guy in front of you, because any reasonable person would look at these interactions and conclude that she's fucking him or about to fuck him. And if that's not allowed, if you are not down with a non-monogamous relationship, and you are certainly not down with a non-monogamous dishonest relationship where she's fucking other people and you're not allowed to fuck other people, then you need to pull the plug. So we're back really where we were 6, 8, 10 minutes ago when we tried to set aside the issue of the other guy at work, the coworker you have to see every day, and just talk about 4 months together, sex falling apart, at each other's throats, irreconcilable differences. You should pull the plug. And we are back now again after gaming this all out. We're back to pull the fucking plug.
Hi, Dan. This is in response to the caller who was messing with her bi friend's feelings. I agree. She was the asshole here. And I just want to say this is a big problem for a lot of young bi girls, especially having straight girlfriends who act super gay with you, like holding your hands, kissing, cuddling, even messing around, who turn around and then get mad at you for rightly assuming that they're interested in us sexually or romantically. It makes us feel ashamed and less likely to come out to other people in the future. So straight girls, please stop using us as experiments and don't mess with our feelings, because it really hurts. Thanks.
Hi, Dan. This is about the gay twink caller with the breast issue. I just wanted to let him know, to give him a little hope. There are a lot of people out there with this condition already. It's called chubby people. So basically, there are a lot of gay guys with kind of effeminate bodies. Some of us have hips. Some of us have what some people would call breast. Of course, we're still men, but we do have what you mentioned as a blended body type, and there are plenty of people that are into us. So I don't think he'll, you know, obviously he's going to have some trouble, but just hang in there, and you will find someone that is attracted to your body and loves you for who you are.
Hi, I'm calling in regards to the most recent episode where the woman was concerned about touching her clit during PIV and having to use her masturbation reel in order to get off. This question relates so strongly to my own experience, and I'm so glad that she called. And I want to add that I've found a way to overcome that specific issue for myself, which is what you had suggested, Dan, which is to do a lot of dirty talk and bringing the fantasy out into the sex. And I've managed to do that with my partner, doing like kind of a half and half, where I do still have kind of some stuff going on in my mind, but I'm also talking, I'm engaging him, and I also get on top. Like, I feel like the more engaged that I get and more kind of active and dominating that I get with my fantasy reel and with my dirty talk, the better the sex is. So I just want to say to that woman, take charge and have fun. And I was where you were, and things are getting a lot better for me. So thanks.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Want to see my amateur porn film festival? Go to humpfilmfest.com to find out when Hump is coming to in or around your town. Want to read my weekly sex advice column? Look for Savage Love in the Georgia Strait and other newspapers all around the country. Want to impeach the motherfucker already? Go to itmfa.org to get the gear and to support the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and the International Refugee Assistance Project. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Randy Kreger on Twitter at Randy Kreger. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth at home and here in Austria. And Nancy, we will all be back at you next week with another installment of The Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.